Welcome to the Engaging People podcast. I'm your host, Cecily Jorgensen, and today we share a roundtable discussion we had with our consultants about supervisors. This is a topic that our clients have told us that they'd like more guidance on, and so our consultants share their observations and stories to help you as a leader become someone who engages others, or help you help leaders in your organizations do the same. Senior consultant Charles Rogel starts our discussion by sharing what conversations sometimes look like when this topic is addressed post-employee engagement survey with HR directors.
So as I look at employee survey results, and especially from the section about how we're measuring the effectiveness of supervisors in an organization, so at the team level, it's interesting because if I see scores that are relatively low compared to the benchmarks, I'll talk to the HR people about it. And they'll give me several reasons. Sometimes it's, hey, we haven't really done a lot of training with our managers. You know, we haven't really budgeted for leadership development or anything like that. So we haven't invested a lot in our managers. So we're not really surprised about seeing scores like that. Sometimes we'll see an environment that's kind of old school, kind of top down in terms of leadership and direction. And so maybe even in a union environment where we'll see lower supervisor scores because it's more command and control, more focused on metrics as opposed to good leadership interaction. And then other times they'll say, well, we've tended to promote our leaders within, and we don't really train them or give them too many tools. So we're promoting kind of the best doers into leadership positions. So we're not surprised to kind of see lower scores in some of these areas around supervisor results. Again, it usually is mixed. So generally we'll see really high scoring results with some leaders and low scoring results for others. And so you kind of have to take a more localized approach to your data. But those are some of the responses I hear when we're talking about leadership in an organization.
We then pretty quickly jumped right into some concerns that clients have when their surveys come back with low scores in the area of supervisors. Consultant Thomas Olson touches on a point we've found in our research at DecisionWise.
I think one of the concerns that I've seen is just when the supervisor scores come back and they're lower, if you look at non-manager and manager, and the manager or supervisor scores are lower than the general population, that's a huge concern, right? Because the managers, supervisors are the ones that are driving or can help drive engagement a lot of times. So if that population is not as engaged or not as motivated, then that's going to hurt, you know, the bigger population at the organization.
So how does this hurt the bigger population? Director of Consulting Christian Nielsen shares one answer.
Attrition is one of the immediate concerns. If we have low scores for a supervisor, people usually won't stick around. I mean, we've all heard the old sayings about leaving managers and those things. We've got data that bears that out in terms of how much how those perceptions, positive perceptions towards your manager are correlated to staying with the organization, those types of things. And so I think that's the immediate concern. On the inverse, it's interesting if there's high scores for the supervisor but low scores elsewhere. That has proven to be something to also pay attention to, because if they're galvanizing as a team connected to the supervisor but have low scores at the organizational level, that's another concern. It's, it can kind of create an us versus them kind of scenario. Ideally, obviously, we want scores that are high at the supervisor, high at the team, high at the job, and high at the organization. And so when there's low scores, immediate concerns, attrition. When it's high scores for the supervisors and low scores elsewhere, then it's kind of where do their allegiances lie?
Charles adds his thoughts on how supervisors affect teams.
So usually if I see low scores in the supervisor section, these are the questions that are measuring the interaction the supervisor is having, you know, whether they're providing feedback or having good communication, that sort of thing. Well, I'll typically always see the scores are low for the team. So the local experience for those, that team itself will score low. So the other section we're measuring is around team dynamics, whether we're getting along, working well together, getting things done. Those scores are typically low when I see low supervisor scores because they have such an influence on the performance of that team.
So if attrition is the main concern, can leaders change who they are and stop people from jumping ship? Can they change old habits into new behaviors, ones that will promote employee engagement across their team and the entire organization? Principal consultant Dan Hoops explores the idea of engagement as a competency.
One of the things that I advise the clients on topics of this is to realize that engagement is a competency. And when we're building leadership capabilities at all levels inside the organization, it's not the traditional, you know, financial acumen, strategy, change management, but there's a people element of as well, which the competency of creating an engaged team is the balance of that. So if the organization has a belief that the what and the how are equally important, then they'll focus on creating the capabilities of the leaders to create engagement in with their teams. And they will also put additional resources, support networks, whatever it may require for them to build that capability. So some of the top advice that I give is be mindful that it is a competency, build it into your systems and processes, build it as a capability in your leadership development processes as well, and understand the impact that having engagement high in the organization can create.
So, what does it take to build engagement into your systems and processes? Can processes be the very way that we give and receive information or feedback? And if so, Christian's simple but often overlooked suggestion should be put back in organizations' people strategy.
My number one recommendation in this area is for manager one-on-ones. We have a lot of data that supports that engagement goes up, perceptions around the company, around growth go up when these manager one-on-ones are happening. And we don't even measure if they're happening very well. We just measure how frequently they're happening. And just having those touch points does some wonderful things for the employee experience. It helps connect them to their team, their manager, to their job, to the company. And so my number one recommendation is make sure those one-on-ones are happening. And then going further in those one-on-ones, there's two elements. Talk about the employee's growth and development, what their growth goals are and what opportunities are aligned with those growth goals. And then also do what I call ride for the brand. Represent the organization well to that employee in that session. People pay very close attention to how the supervisor talks about the company, talks about their superiors, those types of things, and that gets cascaded down and shared within the team. And so talk about growth goals, ride for the brand, in other words, represent that organization, but do so in those one-on-one meetings.
Dan then shares his thoughts on the power of one-on-ones and how supervisors need to change their mindset from strong individual contributor to leader.
I think some of the most engaging experiences that I have had are my interactions with my supervisors. I think of some of the performance conversations that I've had, or some of the alignment meetings, or just career conversations. They have been some of the most memorable experiences that I've had. They've also been some of the most discouraging and frustrating as well. So when we're thinking of the one-on-ones, we may mechanically stumble through that. But the advice that I would give a client is if the intent of the supervisor is genuine in wanting to have that conversation, the mechanics of it become less important than the intent. And if my intent is to really improve that relationship and have a quality of experience that replicates, oh, things are going really well, then I would completely agree with you, Kristen, and I think that's a key differentiator.
Most organizations promote people who are super doers, really strong individual contributors, and then they promote them to managing people without giving them the skills and training and growth and development. They need to kind of shift that identity from rock star individual contributor to supervisor and getting results through others and facilitating performance within a team. And so the people struggle, especially in that first transition from individual contributor to manager. And so, and then that can persist as you move up. Now you're managing managers. And so without actually giving that individual some development and helping them realign their expectations and how they measure their success, then we start to see problems around communication and some of the other things that we see organizations struggle with.
Christian then begins to address another item from our survey and how we measure the effectiveness of supervisors.
I worked at a large consulting firm, and early in my career, I had a boss who was very intense. And someone asked me about working for this person. I was on a flight back from the client site, and a colleague said, well, what's it like to work for this manager or this director? And I said, well, she is maybe the most intense person I've ever met in my life. And I was getting ready to vent a little bit about how tough the project's been. But the next question my colleague asked me was, is she fair? He asked, that was his follow-up question. Is she fair, though? I had to stop myself and said, yeah, she's 100% fair. She expects a lot, but she's very, very fair. And I always think of her when I see this question in the survey. My supervisor treats people with fairness and respect because this person I might not want to go on vacation with, but I would work with her again any day because I learned a lot and I know she expected a lot and she got results. And she treated me with respect, even though she gave me some really challenging assignments and required a lot of output from me and my team. I link these other questions. Do I trust my supervisor? Yes, I trusted her very much, and my supervisor cares about me as a person. While that was a really tough assignment in the moment, in kind of that project-based world, the supervisor, because she treated us with fairness and respect, she was able, and because we trusted her, we knew she had our best interest in mind and wasn't serving her own agenda, and that she cared about us individually, because those things were in place, she got some pretty remarkable output from the team. And so when those things aren't in place within a team, it's hard to get anything done. And then we use a lot of these same questions when we start to talk about diversity and inclusion. I trusted this person. Did everyone on my team, did people that looked different from her or came from a different background from her, did they have the same trust? In that particular situation, I think very much so. But in survey data, we see that's not always the case. Sometimes trust is limited to a select few and some of those things. And so very interesting questions in a survey, and very interesting to consider in your own dynamics with your supervisor.
Charles then gives his thoughts on the question we use in our survey that measures how empowered employees feel to get their work done in the best way they see fit.
The idea is that empowerment comes through what we would call exercising or allowing people to have autonomy. As supervisors are trying to empower, a lot of times when I'm coaching leaders, the problem we run into or they run into if they tend to not empower is that they're afraid to delegate. And a lot of times it's a control issue. So they feel like they just can't let go, can't relinquish control over certain things that they do, because then they kind of feel that they don't do well with ambiguity. Sometimes they also feel like, I don't want to delegate too much because I don't want to burden my employees. And when I ask them or press them on that, they typically say, well, no, if I were to delegate, most of them would say, no, it's not a problem, I can do it. So I think we have this hang up as leaders sometimes to not empower others, to kind of protect them for our own reasons, and also to be nice to them. If we don't empower, though, some bad things happen. So there's this concept of learned helplessness in it. And a good example of this is how a lot of times elephant trainers, when they're training a baby elephant, they will tie up one of its legs on a chain or a rope, and the elephant will struggle for a while as a baby, basically, to get away. But once it realizes that the rope is too strong or the chain is too strong, it eventually gives up. And so when the elephant is full grown, they just use a regular rope or a light rope to tie it up, and it doesn't try to get away because it's learned that it can't escape the rope. In the same way, as managers, if we're constantly saying no to our employees, not letting them kind of exercise autonomy, we teach them learned helplessness, and they tend to be less empowered, less engaged in their roles.
Christian ends our conversation by addressing the question on our survey that he thinks has become more and more statistically important: my supervisor communicates important information to the team.
And we all know through experience and also through intuition that a supervisor controls a lot of the experience of their team, which shapes how engaged or disengaged employees choose to be. One of the things our research has shown that is that one of the biggest things an employee can do is what I call ride for the brand. And that means help connect the people on their team back to the organization. It's one thing to get your team members to like you as a supervisor. Well, it's one thing I'm still struggling to do. But it's one thing to get your team members to like you as a person, as a supervisor, and that's or at least respect you and trust you, feel cared for, those good things. It's another thing to also connect them to the organization. And so driving that deeper connection, that's when we start to see that manager help create a deeper sense of meaning and purpose for the employees on their team. If they understand how their work connects to the larger picture, to the end customer, it facilitates all sorts of kind of deeper connection to the work and invites people to engage. Sharing the information from the top, communicating that helps people feel secure, helps them feel connected. Especially during times of change, as organizations shifting, where people are looking for some sense of a shared future and stability, those types of things. So a manager's role in cascading and communicating information is critical.
Thank you for listening to the Engaging People podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode on supervisors and their role in employee engagement. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, and we'd love to know if you are enjoying the content. So please leave a comment and review. Also, visit decisionwise.com for more articles, case studies, and videos on this topic and more. While you are there, if you are interested in learning more about our employee engagement surveys and 360 feedback assessments or working with one of our consultants, fill out the contact form and a representative will be in touch. So until next time, please enjoy our other content published daily on our website and social media.